Welcome to Startup Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I've an SLB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us by Talkcast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone just off of 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions and the call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702. Or you can join us all in the Twitch channel. That's SFU On Call. So go to twitch.tv/SFU On Call. I keep an eye out on the chat room there. Also, I try to keep an eye on the chat room on TalkShoe, but more on Twitch these days. And I will respond as quickly as I can to any questions that people have, and also, you know, people involved. If there's a comment that I think everyone should hear, I will repeat it for people. And of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to contact me via Twitter, my podcast account is sfuoncall. And also, my personal account is Paul Franz. It's PAULFRANZ. And just a reminder that I'm proud to be a Catholic and I'm an O's fan. And of course, I love tech. And if any of those bothers you, then don't follow me. And of course, if you have my Twitter account is Franz Games, which gives updates very rare on things going on Starfleet Warlord and of course SFB Online. And anything else that might happen for my business account, you never know. I might add another business. You never know. And of course, the lovely Talkcast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. And from ADB, it's been very, very quiet as of late. And that's fine. That happens. And so nothing to report there. There's some quick news when it comes to the SFB Online tournaments. That's actually plural. Yes, it is. And, of course, we have the Sapphire Star 8 tournament. Round 1 is coming to a close. People who there's two games, i.e. 4 opponents, that need to get their button gear and get their games completed. I'm not sure if they might have played some. And I know one of them is always difficult, which is Devil. Majid Farsi, he's located in the UK, so time difference is always is a challenge for him, though I am happy to have him on SFB Online. Thank you, Majid, for being with us, you know, and coming back to playing Starfleet Battles once more. For those of you who don't know Majid, I played him a few times and play by email back in the day. When play by email was the way you played Starfleet Battles over the internet. So, yes, he's been playing it for a while. With those two games, obviously, there's 6 out of 8 have been confirmed and they're finalized. There actually is one round 2 game that has been completed, which is good. So we already have a round 3 opponent already waiting, which is the semifinals, waiting for their opponent to show up. Now, the Masters tournament, that actually completed like two and a half weeks ago. I just got a chance to check in on it today. And yes, it is completed with Jack Taylor defeating Patrick Bikia in the finals. And when it comes to the library, there actually has been more ships in the FedCom library. I actually added a few more. So the squadron size ships are up to 404 ships, and fleet size ships are all the way up to 282. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, just the one and only Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, actually, guess what? We've got Barry. Hey, Barry, how you doing?
Outstanding. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
I don't know how long I can stay because I've got a flight tomorrow, but it's not too early. It's actually late in the day. I'll probably sleep a little later. I'll probably sleep till 5 morning.
That is fine. Yeah, things are getting a little warmer around here, actually. That's one thing I had to do this past weekend and this past week. Had to install two air conditioners.
Oh my.
Yeah.
It's actually, I'm down in Atlanta and it's not that bad.
Yeah, today was
It's like in the 60s.
Today had a high of 89 degrees.
Yeah, it's warmer up there than down here. Go figure.
Yeah, that is weird. And it's supposed to stay like this, and it's supposed to get into like in the 90s next week.
Well, I'll be in town. Let's see, I think fly to Pittsburgh tomorrow, and then Saturday morning, my wife and I should drive out to York. For Sunday, I fly back down to Atlanta.
I assume from Baltimore.
No, Harrisburg.
Okay. Do
Yeah.
you I usually fly out of Baltimore, right?
Well, this job, they don't mind if I fly out of Harrisburg, and Harrisburg is so much easier.
Oh, well, I agree there. That's where I picked up my sister-in-law.
Yeah.
Though I still remember the one time that she got a flight, came into Philadelphia? Yeah, it was Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And then had to wait for, see, she got stuck there for like 2 hours. And I could have easily
That all.
gone, I think 2 or 3 hours, and I could have easily gone down, picked her up, and came back before, by the time she got the flight, actually got to Harrisburg.
Oh, I hear you there. I've been stuck in Philadelphia Airport overnight. That was a bad one. It was my wife was out of town, I think, or she wasn't getting back into town for a while. And they basically kept delaying and delaying and delaying. Around midnight, they said, "No, we're done. We'll fly in the morning." And it's like, oh man, it's like,
Yeah,
and
but
it was a flight from.
I don't live that far from here. Whatever.
That was what it was. It's like, but you're like.
Yeah, the problem, the difficulty is getting your luggage. I'm sure at that point.
Oh yeah, that was the problem. I tried to get my luggage and rent a car, but it was they I couldn't get the luggage out.
Understood.
Well, yeah.
Anyhow, given that, as a particular topic that you wish to discuss,
Okay.
because I have one, but I'm not sure you'll be much interested in it.
Oh.
I.e.,
Which one is that?
it was a topic that I ended the.
Miniatures?
No. Play by email.
I haven't checked my personal email. Which one was it?
No, play by email.
Oh, play by email.
As an asynchronous
Oh,
play of SFB.
well.
It's a topic that I'm interested in, because I really like the idea of asynchronous play, because I think it is. There actually are games out there currently that do asynchronous play really well. Jeez, this is off. I'm blanking at one of them. Frozen Cortex, I think, is one of them. Another XCOM. That's it. XCOM and XCOM 2. They do it really well. They're definitely more graphical in nature, but you do things asynchronously. I.e., you take your pieces, and then what you do with those pieces is that you go and move the pieces, and then say, "Okay, I'm done with my orders for the kind of Vassal doesn't work that well, Iggy. I've looked at it. There's certain things about SFB that doesn't quite handle the way it should, because the whole idea of secret and separate. But anyway, there was a little different discussion I was going to have, but that's why Vassal is not the VASL. I'm not sure what that is. If you could spell that out, is that a game called VASL versus Vassal? I thought you were just using an abbreviation. Oh, virtual ASL.
I forget. What is the premise of XCOM? I've never played it.
Oh, the premise of XCOM is that these alien race have invaded the Earth. And then you have these different squads where you have these different attacks. You have kind of scenarios kind of thing where you try to complete your mission. Missions. That's more of a word to use. The missions using your squad, and depending upon how your squad does, if you lose a squad person or you succeed, in which case you'll get more kind of, I don't think it's bonus points, but you get rewarded for that, and then you can buy better. In some cases, you can buy better equipment or upgrade your soldiers, things like that. Mm. And it's really graphical in nature, in that you tell it, okay, I want to move from this spot to over this spot. I don't want to fire, in this direction, then after you complete your orders, you click done, and it'll move those men and see how it all works out. Okay, when it comes to Frozen Cortex, yes, it's turn based. As I said, asynchronous play. Turn based asynchronous play. Well, asynchronous play is not necessarily. Well, actually, asynchronous play is turn based. But also asynchronous play is a little different in that, idea of asynchronous play is you both have submit your set of orders, what you're planning on doing for the turn independently. So you're not waiting for your opponent to complete his orders to do your orders. And that's one of the things that play by email, does.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Sound a little tired there.
I am.
Yeah, so I really enjoy the idea of asynchronous play. That's why I did some beginning work on a Starfleet Universe based game called SFU Ships. And the idea was to simplify even more down from FedCom and make it completely asynchronous play. And I got the beginning part of it done. There were certain things that, since I'm not really a game designer when it comes to like board games or anything like that, so I don't have the experience with it. But I had some ideas about how to do it. The difficulty was, in my mind, was handling weapons and damage and in some cases speed, because the idea was that your larger ships, like your dreadnoughts, they would be larger, but they'd be slower. Versus, you have a cruiser, which is a little bit smaller, but a little more faster. And then you keep on going down. The smaller the ship, the faster the ship is.
Sounds like the Honorverse.
That's possible. Now,
that's the way it's set up. Now, max speed is identical, but for warships. But
Right.
what changes acceleration? So the smaller ships can accelerate faster, but they don't have a higher max speed. So what ends up happening is, but if you have a higher acceleration, you can, if you've got enough lead, you can always stay away. And yeah, they can match your speed at some point, but you can still, even if they're coming at you so that they have an overtake, you can thrust in a direction perpendicular to the direction of motion.
Right.
If you have enough room, you could get away.
Understood. Well, Newtonian physics is involved in that case. And obviously,
the universe was all about that.
Oh yeah. And Lord knows, that's something that, Ken Burnside was really into, you know, Newtonian physics
he had a point there.
Oh yeah. Oh, I'm not saying it's bad. I think it's really awesome, especially for those people who really like the idea of realism. You know, when it comes to science fiction versus science fantasy, you know.
Who knows what a warp engine would do?
I agree. But in the case of, like, what's Ken Burnside's, the game he created?
Attack Vector or Squadron Strike.
Right. Both of those.
Actually, he created both of those.
Yeah. And in that case, I call them science fiction in that they're based on physics, based on what we know about those things. Now, I'm assuming that in the case of Squadron Strike or Attack Vector, when it comes to moving from system to system, that there was one of those take a leap of faith moments, you know, versus, you know, in a tactical sense is the word I'm looking for. Where a tactical sense, you know, there are certain ways that Newtonian physics works, including, you know, the whole idea, as we both know, the generation of heat from, you know, when weapons fire, you have, based on the weapon, it can actually generate heat. And what's one thing that you had to do? You had to, you know, only, your heat sinks would only absorb so much heat before you had to say, that's it, I'm done. You know, you extended your, basically your heat sinks to radiate the heat. And at that point, you it's like throwing the white flag. I'm done. You know, I concede.
Yeah. Right. Because you just don't have the capability to absorb any more heat.
Oh yeah, and that's why, to me, that's more of science fiction versus science fantasy. But I agree that, you know, we don't know when it comes to, because here's one thing we'll go down that road when it comes to different universes and how they see the universe and how they see faster than light movement, you know, travel occurring, because there's multiple ways that you've seen them, from the simple ones, which are like Starfire. The whole idea is that you can go from point to point using these kind of warp gates kind of thing, and you can either create one, or I think there's also natural points too. Then there's, of course, Star Trek, where you create a warp bubble and you travel, basically you keep kind of generating the warp bubble, and the warp bubble makes you move, you know, which is interesting by itself. And then, of course, there's the Star Wars.
Well, and there's actually, an actual fact that the Albuquerque warp drive was which was actually developed by a Mexican physicist. And it's like, well, it's potentially possible that that could actually work
Right. Oh,
in the
understood.
real world.
Oh, understood. And I agree that we don't know about what is truly will work when it comes to moving faster than light. That there's so many things when it comes to moving faster than light that creates interesting issues. And I mentioned them before,
Right.
the whole idea of observation of, let's say, a collapsing star. If you can move faster than light, that means you can observe that star multiple times. If you just, because of light, the light itself from the star is only traveling as fast as the speed of light.
Right.
And therefore, if you can move faster than that, you can observe it one time, then fly out, a light day from that star and observe it
Yeah.
again. Things like that. And getting back to different forms of travel of faster light, and then of course you have Star Wars. The whole idea of that there is something called hyperspace,
Right.
that you can travel in, which allows you to move faster than in normal space. You have a light drive which puts you into hyperspace, and then so you can fly through hyperspace at very fast speeds, but you still have time that it requires you to take, versus the whole idea of a warp, a kind of gate system, or what was it Giants of Ganymede, who the I had a was the whole idea of wormholes of as a way of traveling, faster than light.
Well, yeah. Now, to tell you the truth, I think Star Wars picked up the idea from Asimov. Because Asimov was talking about hyperspace jumps in the Foundation series, which he published in the 1930s.
Oh, yeah. Huh? I don't
Or
think.
was it the 40s?
Yes,
Was it the 40s?
I thought it might be I'd have to double check on that one, because I don't
Well,
think Asimov is that old.
he was publishing in the 40s. The Foundation series came out in the 1940s.
Don't mind me. I'm checking that out myself, just because you are correct, my dear friend.
So I
In
think Asimov was the one who came up with the idea of hyperspace,
no.
hyper
Well, actually, the.
jump drives,
Okay, let me look at
jump
this.
drives.
Let me look and see exactly. Okay, the first four swords were collected. Oh, okay. Oh, they're part of a short stories in Astounding Magazine back in May of 1942. The books, the first book, Foundation, was not published until 1951.
Right, but the shorts, it was, yeah, he published the stuff first in the Astounding Stories in the 40s.
Astounding Magazine.
Yeah. Which is how you published back then.
Yeah, understood. And what is it? Many years ago, I think it was when I was back in college. I got a book of short stories that had, I think they were Nebula Awards. I think it is.
Yep. The Nebulas, yep.
Yeah, that they had a set of short stories. I mean, there were lots of short stories. And some of these were classical science fiction. I mean, classical science fiction.
Yeah.
And in this case, the one I'm thinking of was basically basically, this guy comes into the bar and is talking and so forth. And then you find out that this person has a third eye as he's walking out the door of the bar. You know, and it's like, whoa.
That almost sounds like a Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah, that kind of thing. But, you know, but it was considered science fiction because only an alien would have a third eye. So,
right.
Yeah. Things like that. Those in my mind were classical science fiction. Chris, Newsy is, you know, one of the people who helps me out with, Federation Commander ship definitions, said that was also a Twilight Zone episode, which is possible that they got the rights from the original author of the story. Yeah, that, or they were.
If I remember
inspired.
Correctly, the guy was from Venus because he just killed the alien from Mars.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think he was the bartender was from Venus and he had a third eye and he was wearing covering it up. And
I apologize. Chris actually mentioned I saw it earlier and it didn't click about that, which was, Dune. When it comes to Fast and Light, the whole idea that you have a way of a folding space and you to go from one point to another point in, you know, in the universe. Now, it's actually that if you've actually read the Dune series, it's actually quite interesting in my mind that, okay, they were really, really paranoid about basically machines. You couldn't.
Mm-hmm. It was AI. They were
right. Computers. Period. Because, and that's why they had Mentats. Mentats actually were meant to be human computers. They were trained human computers.
Mm-hmm.
And so.
I read that series. Yeah.
And towards the end of the series, I'm just thinking about there was a. I want to say empire, not quite empire, house or whatever. That basically they built machines. That's what they did, and replaced the previous way of using basically morphed people that, from all the because they lived in spice, and using the spice they were actually able to. Warp space and time to do the traveling from one point to another point. And they actually created a machine that actually could do the same thing. You know, near the end of the series, at least near the end of when I last read the series, because I think there was some that were written in that
after
series.
Herbert's death.
After Herbert's death, yeah.
Yeah.
I forget who wrote it. I think one of them was written by his son. I forget. But anyhow, that's going to be interesting, actually, when it comes to the Foundation series, is that, you know, Apple TV.
Yeah, Apple, I saw that. Yeah, it's making it.
Yep. Yes. Chris, yeah. Chapter House Dune. I remember the cover of that book, and I did read that book.
Dune or Foundation.
I'm sorry, I sidetracked it because Chris mentioned Chapter House Dune. His son Brian Herbert wrote continuation novels with Kevin Anderson. Yes, that's it. Thank you, Chris. When it comes to Dune, he's saying the Ixians played close to the edge with what was allowed, i.e. Machines. Chris has read them all.
All I can say is I have the same prayer for Foundation that I did when I saw the first trailer for Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
Please, God, don't let them fuck it up.
I understood.
And I was, yeah. Well, and that's one of the things from my childhood that it's like, oh, please don't screw this one up. And Peter Jackson, when it came to the Lord of the Rings, he did us proud. But then when it came to The Hobbit, boy, did he screw it up.
Yeah, but even Lord of the Rings, there were certain tweaks that they did, and I'm pretty much okay with,
Tom Bombadil they got rid of.
Yeah, and also the Ents were, that whole interaction was a little different. But
that wasn't too bad, though.
Not too bad. Yeah, as I said, it was a little tweaks. Now, that's awful. I can't remember the one that was by Sci-Fi Channel that got bought up by Amazon.
Oh, the one for Audible?
No, Darn it. You had Earthers, you had people from Mars.
The Expanse.
The Expanse, thank you. Dang, got it, man.
That is a great show.
Oh, I agree. And it's one of those shows that they tweaked, and they actually explicitly said this in when they that I saw one of the interviews with the authors of the book that mm-hmm. when they rewrote it as a screenplay, in that they said, well,
mm-hmm.
in the book we introduced the characters in this way, but in a screenplay and a TV series we have to change the way things, you know, how they interacted. So how the timeline is still pretty much kept, but some of the interactions, how some of the characters find out about each other and interact with each other changes because of it's a TV series versus a book.
Yeah.
So, because that was one thing I very often. The one thing I really disliked about what they did to George R. R. Martin books,
they butchered that in the last season.
The last one, God. I think everyone, here's the one thing, you really can't say they butchered the books in the last one, because George R. R. Martin still hasn't written the last book.
He knows what not to write.
Do. Yeah, which is... Here's what upsets me. What upsets me tremendously about that part. I really feel like, to the depths of my soul, that George R. R. Martin was waiting for the TV series to complete before he finished the book. That's the only reason why he did not publish that last book, because he wanted everything to be a surprise when it comes to TV series. And now also he knows that he needs to redo. Well, the biggest issue from my understanding of, since I didn't watch after the, I watched the first season, second season, I saw the beginning of it and I just threw it out the window because they completely ruined the timeline at that point, and it's like, okay, that's it. I'm gone. If they're not gonna follow faithfully to the book when it comes to the timeline, forget it. And that is when it comes to the last season, my understanding is that what people really were bothered by is that the characters changed. They didn't hold true to the way that character was played. Well, how the interaction was from the beginning of that series.
I know.
And it's like, what are you doing? Because we all were expected a certain way. Yeah, maybe there was going to be a surprise here and there. But they totally changed some of the characters. I was like, what?
Yeah, it was horrible what they did.
That would be interesting, Chris. Chris is saying, you know, that George R. R. Martin doesn't need to write anymore. That's the problem. And what they do, he's saying what they should do is pull in Tom Clancy and then someone else write them. You know, so interesting idea. Actually, when it comes to the Expanse, I actually bought some of the Middling novels.
The what novels?
Mini novels. They have some smaller novels, which are basically side. They go on these side stories, you know that.
Oh, okay.
They're not part of the main characters. There's your other characters, but in the same universe, but they're not part of the main timeline. Mm-hmm. But they're set within that universe and within the timeline that happens. But they're not. But they don't interact with the main characters.
Yeah.
Which I think is an excellent, excellent idea. You know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. In the Honorverse, he has a couple of collaborators, and there's a whole bunch of side series that are not. They're in the main timeline, but they're different. They're different characters. So same sort of scenario.
Oh yeah. It is mentioned about Wheel of Time. Anyhow, to get back actually to the Starfleet universe.
Why?
Because that's what this podcast is about, my dear friend.
Why?
Because it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
It is.
Now, getting back to, you know, play by email overall. Obviously, there's different kinds of play by email. I think that overall, doing SFB over, you know, by play by email is more difficult than I mentioned this before, which was I had a tweak for FedCom over play by email, which in my mind would work quite well. You know, for if you want to do a play by email game without a moderator, and that is, you have to remove some of the features of FedCom to a certain degree. And one of those is that the whole idea is that for each case, since there are 8 impulses, you can do this relatively quickly, and since there's only 4 subpulses, you can do this relatively quickly. The idea is that you no longer move and have breaks based on turns and so forth within the subpulses. You pre-plot those 4 subpulses. And then, you know, and you both, okay, this is, I'm going to move here, I'm going to move here, I'm going to move here. And there is no conditional orders or anything like that. Because it's you against your opponent. Obviously, the only thing that kind of system would require is something that I wanted to do a while back, which is it's a really basic tool, and I probably should implement it because I'm not gonna say it shouldn't be hard. It's relatively easy to implement. It's the hard part about that is because it works over email. Is that it can be used for spamming and that kind of thing. So, but I think that's you can work around that. And that is the whole, the tool is that you need a tool with, where you both can submit orders. And mm-hmm. then one can submit theirs first, and then another person can submit theirs, you know, and then after that, then they both get the orders traded at that point. So it's basically, it mm-hmm. takes what is done with SFB Online with the impulse activity orders and implements that, but in a website where you would actually just send out emails.
Haven't we had similar discussions about this before?
It's possible. Like I said, I mentioned this idea, this simple tool many years ago. Mm-hmm. Many, many years ago.
That's why I thought it sounded familiar.
Yeah. But that's one of those tools that requires, I definitely have discussed this tweak of play by email for FedCom before. Where it's possible, using that tweak in my mind, you actually can have it with that tool, have it so you can have a moderatorless play by email game against another opponent. That's one thing you could not do with SFB, because SFB has too many impulses. Unless you were willing to basically draw it back to FedCom. I.e., you pre-plot everything for four impulses.
Mm-hmm.
All fire, launching and everything like that. Now, obviously, that would have to be automated. It doesn't really need to be automated. The only thing you would have to automate would be die rolls, and I think there's already websites out there that could can do that now. I.e., you can submit die roll. You know, I want this many die rolls, and they'll send you something, or you know, something along those lines, where it can be used for playing over the internet. So it's a trusted source is the idea. Is that Yeah, you say, oh, I rolled a 5 and a 6. So, so it came up with a total of 11. And it was on a DAC, when you're rolling damage. It's like, oh, so I hit your torpedo. If you did that, if you said that in an email, would you actually believe it from your opponent?
Depends on who the person is.
Yeah, agree.
You want something to trust but verify.
Right, exactly. Oh, okay. I got to answer this one question. Chris said, why play by email when SFB Online exists? Now,
that's a valid question.
That's the point I was going to get around to when it comes to play by email. And that is this. When it comes to playing against an opponent, yes. When you have a live opponent, SFB Online is probably the better way of going. And especially mm-hmm. if you have the time. Here is the critical thing, my friend. One, you have to have the people available to play at the same time that you're playing. Which is always the issue when it comes to live play.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of a good example of this right now is we have Majid Farsi, call sign Devil. He is located in the UK, but he plays SFB Online. Yep. Very hard to do that too, because on the East Coast, if someone's on the East Coast, Eastern Daylight Time at the moment,
Five hour difference.
There's a 4 hour difference because we change daylight saving time and they're British summertime. Those change at different times.
Yeah.
Which we just gotta get rid of it. We gotta get rid of it. We gotta get rid of it. We gotta get rid of the whole concept of daylight saving time and summertime and all that kind of thing. But I digress. I'm not sure. I'm playing 4X. I'm not sure what that is. But anyhow, yeah. So that limits the number of players you can possibly play against. Now, that's the beauty of play by email. Now, obviously, the awful part about play by email is, and I've seen this multiple. Oh, no kidding. Iggy was just mentioning that it's hard to play with guys in Australia. Actually, there is one. Jason Gray. He's in Australia, right? I got to double check his account. Because I know that we've had people in the past. I think it was Jason Gray, who actually one year he actually came to the United States to play at Origins from Australia. And the reason why this guy does, Jason Gray is a professional, or at least he was a professional poker player. So he earned his income by playing poker.
Yeah.
And Lord knows, to say the very least, he is competitive. And
right.
To say the very least, we had an issue with Jason Gray one year. I think that year, in that he's the reason why we actually had to come up with rules when it comes to playing tournaments. That is, there's certain things you cannot do in tournament play, i.e., you can't run into the center of the board and then star castle for no reason at all. Mm-hmm. Other than to get the advantage on your opponent. The rules and that were updated require that you actually attack. You can't run in and be totally in defensive position at all times, because in SFB, unlike FedCom, you can really take advantage of that being stationary. In FedCom, you can't do that. Why? Because of you're limited by the amount of shield reinforcement you can actually have based on the number of batteries you've got. Versus SFB, if you generate 40 points of power and you're only using 10 just for weapons and so forth, you can put 30 towards reinforcement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is the reason why they actually had to codify those rules. So the first turn, you know, okay, it's okay. You know, you might get a warning. You have to go three turns. If on the third turn you will be. If you did it for a third turn in a row, you'd be forced, you would absolutely, the judge would come in and say, you concede, game over. That was the rule.
Right.
Yes, plasma still kills. But you can also, okay, wild weasel, you know. Depends upon how much plasma. It does not make it easy. And remember also, when it comes to tournaments, Iggy, when the live tournaments, you've got a 3-hour total time. You must complete your game in 3 hours. At that point, if it's not completed, it will be adjudicated. This is not like SFB Online. SFB Online, you can actually have a really long game. There is no time limit on it, which actually produces a problem itself, in that since there is no time limit, and more to the point, you don't have continuous play. This is, I mentioned this before, and I'll mention it again, which is it produces the issue with tournament play, where you could play three turns, say, okay, well, Steve, I got to go do something else, and never get back to the game. At that point, what happens? Is it adjudicated? Is it possible to adjudicate it at all? Especially in the case of after a single turn, because depending upon the players involved, a single turn in SFB Online, the first turn, which should, in my mind, should be the fastest turn of any turn. Because if you ever play by email tournaments, the first turn, you could get the first turn done in half a week. If the people involved would actually be very responsive, the idea is you had 16 impulses, and then another 16 impulses. And invariably, you can actually get it so that no one breaks. There's not a single break. So it never stops. Because that's one thing that you find out in play by email. And that is those little things that you would do in real life don't make a hill of beans. They make no difference whatsoever. They're tweaks that might make you feel better, but they don't change the outcome. It's with play by email, it forces you to play with broader strokes. I still remember to this day there was a person, I forget their name now, that they got within a certain bit of range of their opponent, and they only would submit one impulse at a time. And it's like, wait a minute, dude, you really need to submit more than a single impulse, because of invariably, unless there's a certain something that you're looking for, you're not actually trying to predict what the person, what your opponent's doing. All you're doing is you're playing SFB in real time, in real life. Where it's like, no. The idea of play by email is that you think about what your opponent's going to do, and then you make your plans based on what you think your opponent's going to do. And if it does something different than you expect, then put a break point. It's like, okay, I don't expect him to turn towards me. If he does, break. So if you're falling behind him and he just keeps running, you're not doing anything. Okay, if he launches, all of a sudden he launches a drone. Stop. Okay, that I can understand. But tweaking through the impulses and sometimes down the segment level, it's like, no. That's not what play by email was designed to do. Right. The idea is with play by email is to get through as many impulses as possible in an automated fashion, so that you can complete the game within a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
No, actually, Iggy, seeking weapons were not a bear. Seeking weapons were easy, because for the most part, you as a player, you don't care where the seeking weapons go. If the seeking weapons launched at range 15, you do not care. You're not gonna look at every little hex that a seeking weapon moves to. What you're going to do is you're going to launch it. The only thing that you might affect things at all is that you might tell the moderator, okay, I want you to move the drone or move the seeking weapon so that it goes towards shield number one or towards shield number four, i.e. follow versus leading movement. Now, when you get close, yeah. Oh, Iggy, I agree. When you get down to within range 5, that's when things get interesting. But still, when you get to range, let's say range 3, somewhere between range 3 and range 5, that you say, I want to break. I want to look to see where the seeking weapons are and what I'm going to be doing with them. And
hey, Paul, I'm going to need to call it a night.
Okay. Well,
Okay.
you have a good night.
See you.
Okay, bye. Okay. But at that point, when the taking weapons get that close, yeah. And here's the funny part. Here's the funny part about play by email tournament games. In that first turn, when people played it long enough, what the people would actually start doing is, don't break when seeking weapon gets to range 10. Now this is the first turn, so that's special. And you don't normally you get a break when the seeking weapon launched. After you play it a while, play by email, but completely by that automated system, where you have a moderator and so forth, you realize it does not matter when they launched it. If a person launches a drone at range 20, is that going to change the way you move at all? Because even let's say that the person is a zinni, or even okay, let's go worst case scenario here. Let's say it's a Win Aux box with six drones. If that one they launch speed 20 drones, six of them at range 20, are you gonna care? No, you're not gonna care. You're not gonna care until they get range 10. This is the first turn. And so people would do that. They'd actually have it so that they set a break at range 10. If the seeking weapons enter range 10, break. If you don't have it so that, and basically you said ignore launch weapons for breaks, because by default it was. Yeah, the tournament ships can carry 32 speed drones. Those are limited to Zinni or Klingon. Klingon can launch a maximum of two real drones, that are that fast, and Zinni maximum of four. Now, that if you were concerned about, still, at range 20, okay, that if you wait until range 10, that's 10 impulses. Are you going to modify your movement based on four fast drones? I mean, really, this is the stuff that you, when you play enough, you realize how much. Yeah, no speed 40, no Savos in tournament play, no. Standard speed 32 plasma, and Lord knows, if you launch plasma outside of range 10, go home. Just go home. I understood, Iggy. But yeah, see that's the thing about playing by email. And if you played it enough, you realize some of the stuff just does not matter. So I think to me, that is the great thing about play by email, in that it really helps you think about the game and think about what actually is important when it comes to movement, when it comes to actions and so forth, versus the current mechanism when it comes to playing online. Because when you play online, you worry about every little itty-bitty little thing that happens. Or at least you're interrupted for every little bit of action that a person takes. And at that point, what do you have to do? When they launch a drone, when they do something silly and they drop their shields or launch a shuttle, you then have to think about that and go, is that something I need to worry about? So there's a cognitive load at that moment in time. No matter what, no matter if you say, oh, I can ignore it, you still have to think about it. Can I ignore it? So there's a cognitive load. Now, a play by email, if you play it for a while, I'm not saying that, you know, obviously that's something you're gonna think about. You're gonna have your personal set of, okay, these are my personal set of breakpoints that I'll set that I feel comfortable with using every single time that I play a game. And you do that. And the cognitive load is, in my mind, is it's put up front, and then you don't think about it until you get the next turn. Now, that's one of those things about play by email. Why would you want to play by email when you have SFB online? And that is, as I mentioned, that you can have it so that you can play anyone anywhere in the whole world and not have to worry about being online at the same time. For example, as was pointed out by, I think, Iggy, it was about Jason Gray, who's in Australia, playing someone in the United States, which is like a 13-hour difference. So either he plays in the morning while someone plays in the evening, or he plays in the evening and someone plays in the morning. Those kind of things happen, which is makes things really interesting when it comes to that. So interesting. I will get back to the topic I want to get to, because again, I mentioned it late last week at the end of the podcast, and I'm not gonna that's one that I wanted to have as the main topic for tonight. That obviously that went out the window. We did talk about play by email, but we didn't talk about the aspect of play by email which I think will cause it to be successful. And I'm not gonna go there at this moment in time. Chris, the topic was, can play by email be successful against a computer opponent? I.e., is there a would it better be played if it was completely an automated opponent? You against the computer. Exactly. I think it's an interesting topic, something to be discussed, because you're no longer, there's no moderator, there's no opponent. And you don't have, again, the big thing, you don't have to spend all the time just focusing on that one thing. And I will get back to that, hopefully, next week. I will discuss the points, the good, the bad, the ugly. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.